Today on Straight Talk Africa, the challenges African women face in accessing and sustaining leadership positions on the mother continent. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Salih. And today, it's a discussion on women and leadership roles in Africa. African women are facing enormous challenges to reach their political and social goals. Their stories of resilience and their ability to succeed despite repeated hardships are remarkable. My colleague, Paul Ondiho, has more.
Women are slowly breaking into the historically male-dominated political domain of becoming an African president. Many women are now telling their stories and sparking essential and necessary dialogue as they strive to reach the political mountaintop of their countries.
Today we celebrate the power of activism that can bring change for all women. For generations, women have been fighting for their rights and making their voices heard all over the world.
In October 2018, the Ethiopian Parliament approved Sahel Work Zawadi as the country's first female president. Her appointment marks another shift in Ethiopia's political system. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, became the first democratically elected female president in Africa in 2005. Her achievements as president made her an excellent role model for women across the continent.
I have an opportunity to open the doors for more African women to hold high-level political positions. Challenging because I represent the aspirations and expectations of Liberian, African women, maybe women all over the world, and therefore the pressure is on me to make sure that I succeed.
As a trailblazer for women, Sirleaf has inspired more women to join politics. The rise of former Malawian president Joyce Banda did not come easy. Her ability to reach the nation's highest office despite repeated hardships is remarkable. She rose through the ranks to become Malawi's first female president.
But when you get into leadership as a woman, the first thing you want to look at, you notice first, is the well-being of fellow women. So therefore, we must begin in Africa, empower women economically, support them to run businesses, because all these other issues are taken care of.
Another woman who reached the pinnacle of her country's political leadership is former Central African Republic President Catherine Samba Panza, who served as interim president from 2014 to 2016. She was the first woman to become head of state in that country. Another female politician on the rise is Gambia's Vice President Fatoumata Tabang-Jang, appointed in 2017. She is a strong advocate for women and a staunch human rights defender. The pool of qualified women is growing as more women vie for political office. Former long-time Zimbabwean Vice President Joyce Mujuru was considered a political successor to Robert Mugabe until he fired her in 2014, accusing her of leading a plot to oust him. Young, energetic, and ambitious African women are now entering the political arena. Diane Rigara rose to fame after she announced that she was challenging Rwanda's strongman Paul Kagame in the country's July 2017 presidential election. However, Rigara was not allowed to run and later thrown into jail for allegedly inciting insurrection, among other charges. Rigara continues to be a beacon of hope for many young women across the continent. Obijili Ezekwesili, Nigeria's leading female presidential candidate, recently withdrew from the crowded field of candidates running in the February 16th presidential election. Women across Africa are putting government establishment on notice that they are now a political force to be reckoned with. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us live via Skype from the Ghanaian capital of Accra is Betty Mould Idrisu, a lawyer and politician. She previously served as her nation's Minister of Education and Attorney General. And joining us here in Washington are three distinguished guests. Helen Tadese, producer and host of the Golden Lady Show, a weekly program on Fana television in Ethiopia. Ndimuyake Mwakalyerye, chief of VOA's Zimbabwe service. And Ian Bior, a VOA reporter and a co-host of VOA's Our Voices television show. I have to say, ladies, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Now, I have to say, Betty, that you have been there and done it. Congratulations for your service.
Thank you very much. It's not been an easy rise, and it's not been easy to try and stay there.
What is it like when you get there? What is the pressure like, especially given that a lot of eyes are focusing on you, some of them, of course, wishing you to succeed, but probably a lot of them also perhaps wishing you to fall down?
I don't think, you know, I'm not an advocate of women, we are our own worst enemies phraseology at all. I do not believe that, because I worked at the Ministry of Justice. I was Ghana's first female Attorney General and Minister of Justice. And I had previously worked there, and it was a female-dominated environment. I want to say that it was hectic, it was a pressure tank, and while you're on the job, you don't feel the political pressures until you leave. And maybe it's naivety, maybe it's just being a woman, so you're trying to juggle so many different things at once that you don't think of the perception of your success and what it might lead to. You know, in 2008, I was being touted as a possible vice presidential candidate. And I want to tell everybody that it did not do me any good at that time. It did the women of my party good. It did the women of Ghana good. But personally, I think it was one of the leading factors that, you know, helped pull me down very fast.
You know, Betty, there is a saying that in the context in which you have described, there is a saying that it could actually be lonely up there. Is that something that you felt?
You don't feel it at that time. You feel it, you know, later on. And you know, Africa, we are cushioned by our family. I was lucky, I had a very supportive family. We are cushioned by colleague professionals, because I am a lawyer. And you're cushioned by your fellow politicians. It's just that sometimes it's difficult for the men to see you as their fellows. And that becomes the issue. And sometimes you don't see yourself what others are seeing, that you are a woman on the rise. And there are a multiplicity of factors, both cultural, both traditional, both political, social, professional, that can conspire to bring you down. Never, never take it for granted for being at the top. Never also, I say to my fellow African women politicians, never also think that the rise to the top can be that meteoric or that easy. It's a difficult and ultimately, yes, a very lonely climb. And it's when you tumble, you can tumble right down. The secret, pick yourself up and move on, and you can do it.
What sort of advice would you give women who hope to climb and get to where you have been, and indeed even get a little bit further than that. What do they need to do in order to prepare themselves for such opportunities?
You need to be very confident. You need to believe in yourself. You don't need to surround yourself by people who think or maybe possibly pontificate that you are the best, you are doing the best. You need to believe in yourself. You need to free yourself of the stereotypes. You need to have a certain comfort level. And that comfort level must be very basic within the political climate or environment within which you operate. You know, I hate to say this. I dreamt that it could be. I don't want to dash any woman's dreams because I think that some of us are household names in our respective countries. But you should always, always reach for your dreams. Always try to climb to the top. But be conscious that whilst you're doing that, a variety of your actions or inactions can be conspiring to pull you down. And let me just say that one needs a certain financial and a certain level of family support, without which, in our context in Africa, really and honestly, you cannot succeed.
Now, talking about dreams, Betty, it seems to me that the last time I checked, the African culture prepares you to be or to play a supportive role, to support your husband, for example, if you are married, or support your family. Does it ever, in fact, prepare you to play a leading role, as in Hollywood?
Oh, yes, it does. I would look at my own traditional background and say, where I come from in Ghana, we are the, you know, we come from, we're a family, not a family, we're a kingdom, the Ashanti Kingdom, and we are matriarchal. And therefore, the women are the ones who ultimately take the decisions and are the leaders. The queen mothers make the kings. And I was brought up in this environment and also in a very British Accra environment of my family being a family of women achievers. And it's only recently, in the last 10 or 15 years, that really I've come to question this struggle and this identity. You take it as given that you have to be traditional to your husband and, you know, subservient to your husband in the home. I remember the general secretary of my party telling me that, oh my gosh, when he went to a meeting and told them that, oh, Madame Betty, she serves her husband and she will serve you as well if you go to her house for a meeting. And I looked at him because I thought it was normal to serve my husband and yet to also be a leader in my party. So you have to have a certain a traditional, you know, outlook in order to succeed in my generation. I think my daughter's generation is somewhat different. They don't think the way we do. The idea of serving husbands is a bit different. But ultimately, we have the stereotype, and ultimately, you have people like myself and some of the people you've mentioned in your the reports, who've never seen the reason why we can't be African women and yet we cannot be leaders. And I think it's important for our daughters and our sisters and our people, the women, the young women of Africa, please dream to be at the top. The generational difference between Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and our now appointed president of Ethiopia and Joyce Banda. When I was at the Commonwealth, I had some interactions with you know, some of the politicians at that level. It is difficult. And there's been too much time spent in us getting where we are. We are still not enough. We are just a token of where we could be. And I would encourage other women leaders to dream and to actually try and activate their dreams.
I am sure, Betty, there must have been some women and perhaps some men who gave you their shoulders to climb on so that you could see a little bit further. Do you, for example, owe any debts of gratitude to any specific individuals as those that in fact may have inspired you?
I would always say my husband, because my husband is a politician himself. So I was lucky enough to be married to a politician, one of our leading politicians in Ghana. And I would say also the late Professor Mills, who gave me the opportunity. At that time, it was absolutely revolutionary for a woman to become Ghana, you know, a Ghanaian Attorney General. It just wasn't there. And, you know, to the General Secretary of my party, who told me that one day I could lead this country. I haven't lost the dream. There are generations of women, you know, before me, and of men, my grandmother, my campaign supporters, and, you know, chairmen, and so on, who have, and the youth of the party, who have always inspired me to move on and to move up. And I think that's the great difference between African politics, women being in politics, than it is to Europe and the rest of the world. You need that support, because the things that are thrown at you are absolutely unbelievable. And it's only later on that you sit back and say, hey, did I really need to go through that? Was I able to do that? I think that we have an easier task now. People ask me, why do I continuously come out? And I say that it's because I want to be an example, not a sacrifice, of course, but one wants to show that, yes, in Africa, you don't only have to be an educated woman, because some of the true women leaders I've met have never gone to school before. You have to dream. You have to be a leader. You have to not see the barriers. You have to reach out there. It's difficult to say and difficult to put in practice. I've just come out of a bruising campaign to where I was the first woman in Ghana to campaign and to offer myself up for chairman of the two major political parties. Hey, it wasn't easy, but I've made it. And even though I could not succeed to be the chairman, at least I think I've paved the way for other Ghanaian women to also be able to file a nomination paper and go through a bruising campaign. So please, let us give ourselves up for this. Let us stand up and be counted. And let us never forget to thank all of those who have supported us. And family in Africa, as we know, can be everything.
You know, Betty, it is one thing, of course, to fight and, in fact, struggle at a local or national level and regional level as an African woman who happens to be a leader. What about internationally? Because you've had the experience, for example, of working at the Commonwealth Secretariat, Marlborough House, perhaps in London. What about the fact that you end up being a legal officer at the Commonwealth Secretariat? Not only are you a woman, an African woman, and a black human being, in that particular case.
Correction. I was actually the director of the legal division. And it was an exhilarating experience professionally. it profoundly impacted on me to be in this Commonwealth of Nations and to be able to give legal advice to heads of state, to hold ministers of justice and attorney general's meetings, to be able to make law, and develop frameworks, not only for gender equality. I used to speak at every single International Women's Day. I personally commemorate International Women's Day. I also have been, I was the co-founder of the African Women Lawyers and was chairman for a very long time. So I'm comfortable working in an international environment. But it's, you don't find it as difficult there. You don't feel the challenges as much there to be a leader there. It's not that difficult. And because they are not to be seen to be impeding the progress of women. Indeed, the Commonwealth Secretariat at Marlborough House was a wonderful platform for me to come back to in terms of development of international law and development of other legal framework in terms of gender equalization. But my previous work in Africa in terms of gender equality, you know, in terms of gender activism, human rights work in the law has also given me that background. I wished that maybe I had stayed on to become maybe one of the first women secretary generals, but there was a secretary general who was a female, and I think that she just left the Commonwealth Secretariat. She was UK Caribbean descent, and Baroness Scotland, and it was amazing. I knew her, and I think that when you compare Africa, for example, and I'm not saying this unkindly in Africa because our struggle is wider, to the Caribbean, the situation of the women in the Caribbean, you find a lot of difference. And I was humbled to be with so many women ministers from the Caribbean, and they have had several women presidents and prime ministers. And it's humbling to be with them and see how really they take it in their stride, and then you know that it can be done. And I think it's all this, the sum of these experiences that have made me, I'm not giving up at any time in my life. And I hope that others can follow and also be able to take, you know, to take up the challenge. It's very important to me. And we've made the strides, but we haven't done enough. We need to do more.
What would you say, Betty, that it is your single most important contribution or single most important decision that you made during the time you were at the top? And what about the single most regrettable decision?
Wow. Well, I think the single largest or most significant decision I made was to go for the political, to put my hat in the political arena. Being Attorney General didn't work out as well for me as I wanted. Being the Minister of Education was a wonderful experience because I lectured also at the University of Ghana for many years, and it gave me a passion for imparting education. I think maybe the most regrettable is that I'm still, since my political career, I'm still not as active in gender that I would like to be over the last 10 years since I've been in politics. I was very, very, very active in gender. Whilst I'm active, I'm not as active as I should be on the African continent. And I regret that slightly. I regret, you know, not doing more for the women of Africa, not only of Ghana. Because in Ghana, I'm almost a household name. But in Africa, I think I could have done more. And maybe I could have inspired more. So those would be the little regrets that I have. But In total, I think that I love my skin. I love being who I am. I could do without some of the challenges that I've had to face in my life. And I pray that in my lifetime we'll see more presidents, more vice presidents. And I pray that I'm able to inspire more women, because that's my mission, especially in Ghana, to inspire more women to come into leadership. And I'm actively doing that right now.
Talking about inspiring other women, in fact, I was thinking about the fact that you have been a beneficiary, for example, of other people's shoulders, which you were able to climb on in order to stay a little bit further. Are you in a position, for example, to tell us whether, in fact, you have also been able to provide your shoulders to the young African youth or young African woman to climb on your shoulders so that she, too, can see a little bit further than you?
So many of them. I've literally mentored hundreds of especially women lawyers and women politicians in from all across Ghana, because I'm, even though I'm from the south, I'm married in the north. So I cross the whole spectrum of this country. So 30 million people, over half of which are women, most of them do know me. And in one context or the other, I can say that I provided a platform, I provided definitely shoulders, which I'm still providing, to many Ghanaian women and to some in East and Southern Africa, where in my younger days. I was the chairperson for the women lawyers movement, not only in Ghana, but in Africa. And I think it was revolutionary at that time. We broke new grounds. We made new laws which have impacted on the status of women in Africa collectively. I went around Africa promoting the human rights of women. I noticed there's somebody from Ethiopia there. I was one of the first who went to the Ethiopian women lawyers, and they came here to Ghana to learn from us and share our experiences, especially on the rights of women after, you know, upon dissolution of marriage or upon intestacy, death in intestacy. And these provide a huge backdrop for a woman to be able to be courageous in both her married life and in her family life, knowing that she's not going to be treated like a second minority, or treated as a child, as they are in some countries. I noticed that there's somebody from Zimbabwe too on the panel who will tell you that previously, I don't know if the law is still there in Zimbabwe, but previously, where the boy child had more rights than an adult woman upon in death intestate. And I think that this, to me, has been one of my lasting contributions to Ghana and to Africa. Simplification of laws, especially after VHA, and being able to provide that framework of legal and of laws, and actually going down to the women and explaining to them and giving them free legal aid. We were the first organization in Ghana that gave free legal services to women after the passage of our interstate succession law. It's with equal regret that when I was Attorney General in 2010, I stood in Parliament and moved for the adoption, for the passage of two laws. One was to enhance the interstate succession law of Ghana, which gives women and children rights to their husband and their father's property upon death intestate. And also a law, a new groundbreaking law, which gives property rights equally to women and men upon dissolution of marriage. To date, those two bills have not been passed by the Ghanaian Parliament. That is what some 8-9 years. And these are the things I regret, you know, that maybe I could have done it better. We did whatever we could, but that couldn't happen. And I know the struggle that other African women in other African countries face to pass what you think are simple laws. I applaud to date the Me Too movement. We need more of that. In Africa, our voices are rising, but they haven't risen to the impact, you know, to give the full impact that they should have. So there's so much to say, so much to do. And even though maybe the years I have left in front of me are shorter than the years behind me, I still think that there's a lot that I can offer and that I would want to offer to Africa and to our women and to the leaders.
Well, Betty, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, but it has been a very, very interesting interaction. And in fact, if you do have any plans coming to Washington, please let us know, because we would love to host you right from here in the Washington studios.
Thank you so much. I'll let you know when I'm there next.
You're most welcome. And of course, once again, thank you very much for your service. And we wish you, of course, wish you all the best in whatever else you endeavor.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome, Betty. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Send us a tweet at VOA Shaka or go to Facebook where we are streaming live and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the West perpetually talks about its democratic values, self-determination, and freedoms. How do these concepts become realities in Africa, and what do they really mean? An in-depth discussion on freedom of expression on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are discussing the challenges of African women face in accessing and sustaining leadership positions on the mother continent. Our guests today are Helen Tadese, producer and host of the Golden Lady Show, a weekly program on Fana television station in Ethiopia. Nimiake Mwakalyerye, chief of VOA Zimbabwe service, and Ayan Bior, VOA reporter, and a co-host, Our Voices, a weekly VOA television program. Ladies, I have to say once again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Equally honored.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you immediately, Helen. You listen to Betty. Your reaction?
Well, it's unbelievable. It's very inspiring.
Very inspiring.
Yeah, very inspiring, very encouraging that, you know, we, as a woman in Africa, we are a different place, different spot that we have to work hard and to accomplish something better than never done before. So I see that that's, this is, you know, I'm an artist, I'm not a politician, but I do my best to, you know, to lift up or encourage and motivate other women that by my art. And then I admire the politicians, women in Africa. It's beautiful that the way how they handle the situation inside the house and, you know, the, as a mother, as a sister, and at the same time glorify outside and, you know, outshine. So it's beautiful. It's encouraging and beautiful.
As you watched Betty and as you listened and interacted with her, did you learn something that you think you might incorporate in your Golden Lady show?
Oh, I mean, my Golden Lady show is, it's always, that the idea is always in my heart from the back. Like, this is not the first time I have done based on a woman. This, actually, the Golden Lady, it's all about lifting up women, inspiring in a good lifestyle and changing ourselves and learning process every day. And, you know, we can make a mistake, we can fall, and at the same time, we can get up and just, you know, go for it. That's all. But this is how I am. I'm not putting something that I'm not. And this is me. So
authentic you.
Yes, this is me. I'm sharing my heart, and I'm sharing my genuine...
Authentic Helen, a lady from the hidden empire, what some call the hidden empire of Sheba.
Yes, exactly. So since when I was high school, I was into art, and I was always focused on a woman's. That's why I had a feature film in Ethiopia. That film, a title is Sarah, that was based on a woman, domestic violence, especially sexually insulted, sexually abused a woman. But after, most of the time in Ethiopia or any Africans, you know, first of all, people who had that, I mean, who go through that, they don't want to talk, and then they suffer.
They don't want to talk about it.
They don't want to talk about it.
They suffer.
They're embarrassed, and then it's not encouraging. There's nothing encouraging outside to go.
Or they feel like they are probably bringing shame to their families.
Yes, exactly. So that's why that woman, she's going through a lot of hard time and trauma, but no one never understand her. So the impact is like she was like start having a nightmare, and a day nightmare. So that was, I was trying to say that every time, like, whatever I work, whatever I create, it's all about a woman. It's all about lifting up and doing the best thing. So but we have a part and different part, and I'm not a politician. A lot of people are politicians.
Inspiring.
But I'm always inspired.
Motivating and inspiring indeed. What about you, Mwakariere Dimuyake?
Well, thank you so much, Shaka. Thanks, first of all, for having me on your show. And absolutely, she's such an inspiration. And I think also Paul really put it into perspective, the, you know, just the achievements that women in Africa are making. Of course, when you think that there are 54 countries, there's a whole lot more names we should be calling in terms of leaders on that governmental level. But nonetheless, women are doing a lot. And I think I was just commenting, even with Mrs. Moldi Drusu, that even as she feels she has not achieved much, or she's almost kind of underplaying that, okay, because she wasn't chairwoman or chairman, that she didn't achieve or she didn't succeed. But I think that's one of the traits that as women we really need to work on, that sense of what is achievement? At what point can you actually say, you know, what more can you do before you really get that sense of internal satisfaction and gratification, and understanding that it is a long, tough road to just do half of what she's done. In fact, she really reminds me a lot of my own mother, who was a very strong, very, very, you know, diligent woman, might never have held a political office or
a freedom so, fighter.
A freedom
I remember,
fighter,
of course, hosting her, especially when she wrote that great book.
And I'm very honored
book,
that you
yes.
did that. Mm. Yet, absolute, you know, embodiment of a powerful leader and a woman. So I think it's a question of how do we appreciate what being a leader means and how much do you have to achieve before you can consider yourself a success story of such.
Very interesting. Ayen Bior, you belong to a later generation. Mm-hmm. Any interesting things that you may in fact have learned from Betty?
Well, a lot. But as she was talking, I was thinking of this idea called the imposter syndrome. I don't know if you ladies are familiar with it, but that's something that I suffer with it, and I think a lot of women do. Mm. And it's this idea that we're not smart enough or capable enough to hold office or to even sit here at a table and, you know, give our thoughts. And it just made me realize that just her presence in and of itself is enough. Ethiopia, even, you know, there's a female president in Ethiopia right now, and people say that it's largely ceremonial. I completely disagree with that, because I think that just, in essence, just having a female president in Ethiopia encourages other women to strive for greatness, and I think that that is more than ceremonial.
It is a symbol, and of course, it could also be symbolically very, very significant.
Absolutely.
Because you're talking about, you know, you're talking about this business of huge ceilings being broken, really, so that a little girl somewhere can say, you know what, I too could actually live in State House.
Absolutely.
Be commander-in-chief of my country's armed forces.
Absolutely. And I just want to say that I think it starts when we're young. Because when I was a little girl growing up, I had two parents who were very conservative South Sudanese parents. And so we had household duties that were split between girls and the boys. So at a very young age, I was conditioned to believe that I was different and I was not as capable as my brothers. Thankfully, my parents corrected that as I was growing up and encouraged me, you know, to read and to pursue my education. And actually, I found out in high school that the only time that my mom would leave me alone and not ask me to do any household duties was when I was doing my homework or reading. So I just started reading just so that my mom wouldn't ask me to, you know, to do any household duties. But I think that because I had parents that really supported me, that shifted the dynamics growing up. And now I can be encouraged, and now I am an empowered young woman because of my parents.
I think that's the beauty of African women, because we are a fighter. We can't stop. We refuse to give up. We refuse to, you know, we always like come up with something that even though there's nothing that encourages us and the situation is not comfortable like other, you know, we're not privileged, privileged as a woman in Africa, but we always fight. We always fight. So I think that's the beauty of African women.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important that we have your program, the Golden Lady, and our voices, because we have these programs that really allow women to use their voice. We now have a platform where women can get up and say these things, where previously we really didn't have an outlet. I can almost promise you that if you look on your Facebook page right now, Shaka, the conversation on this show that's being held is probably being dominated by men. And I always wonder, where are the women's voices? Why aren't they speaking?
Exactly.
Yes. Yes,
now, talking about that, you remember that I asked some question to Helen about whether she may have learned something or picked up something in her interaction with Betty that she would eventually incorporate into her Golden Lady show. Mm-hmm. What about you? Is there anything in particular that you may, in fact, have learned from Betty that you hope or you look forward to incorporating in our voices?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down so much as she was talking. But the one thing that she said that really struck me, that reminded me of my mom, she said that there's a lot of African women out there who are not educated, but they're some of the smartest women that she's ever met. And it reminds me of my mom. My mom in our household is the least educated. She only finished high school. She didn't get to go to college.
I hope that when you talk about education here, you are not limiting it to, quote-unquote, Western education.
It's not just Western education. Both my mom and my dad were educated, my dad in Sudan and my mom in Southern Sudan at the time.
What about traditional African education?
Well, I think that, well, that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that my mom didn't do the traditional college. She didn't do any of that. But she remains to be the smartest person that I know. Yeah. And so I think that what I learned from Betty is just looking at women as not just this one homogenous being, but women who bring different things to the table. No matter what their educational achievements are, every woman has something that they can offer.
Yes, I think so. Mm. I think so. To say that something that anything you give for a woman, she gonna accomplish in the best way. I think the common sense, and we already have the talent that even we don't have education that much, we can come up with a beautiful result. Mm-hmm. And that's a gift, I think. I'm not saying that a man doesn't have that. But a woman, the woman's gift is like obvious. Like if she puts something in her heart, she can come up with the best thing.
Now, Dumuyake, we're talking about a lot of things here, and probably one thing that stands out is the perception, for example, societal perception regarding women. Women as people who are weak. Who are not capable of doing A, B, C, D, and what have you. But you are African women. You are also people who happen to live in a country called the United States of America, and it also has its own problems. How do you, for example, reconcile the fact that you are an African woman living in America where there is a dominant culture that also, in a way, looks at women and people of color in a different way?
It's a very unfortunate reality, of course, in this country, but also in so many parts of the world. And I think this is when it's really pertinent for women most of the time to really, and I think Betty Moldedrisu addressed the issue of how do you build your strength from within? Because ultimately, you have to, in this world, demand your presence to be acknowledged on the table. And, you know, when you have the likes of even, you know, speaking about this country, Hillary Clinton running for president and all the, you know, some of the backlash that she got just being a woman. And also just the, sometimes the lack of respect, regard, and consideration for what a woman really brings to the table. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people just diminish the role and the abilities of women. And then, you know, on a very sad extreme, you see it happening in places like it is happening right now in Zimbabwe and in so many other countries, DRC, even in Sudan, in South Sudan, where rape is being used as a tool of war and a tool of oppression. Why? Because at the very fundamental element, what does it say? You are nothing. And I think that's one of the most decrepitating way that societies and men in particular try to really reduce what a woman can do. And just playing along again, playing it back in my head, the video that Paul Diho played at the top of the show of the hour, hearing the presidents, the former presidents of Malawi and Liberia, where they were talking about, you know, the toughness. You know, it's not an easy job. You have so much responsibility, and sometimes the support is
you
not
have to have fire in the belly.
You have to have fire
you
in the belly.
You have to have network.
And then you have to have that element of, you know, grit within you, which is very difficult for a lot of women to really build up. Because also, again, because of our tradition, we are brought up and we are taught to be, you know, very humble, very, you know, you know, full of humility, where you're not supposed to really speak out so dominantly.
To be humble
because
but firm.
Humble but firm.
Do you agree with some who say that perhaps what is needed, in fact, is fundamental changes in both men's and women's attitudes and mindsets?
Well, I think that's the key, because at the end of the day, it is about acceptance that we are all equal. And I think there's always this desperation from women to literally just say, I am one of you. I think also Moldedrisu just addressed that. I wrote a quote here which said, men don't see women in similar roles as fellow colleagues
because they
are not really establishing that we are at par. And I think, you know, as we were having a discussion before the show started, that these are roles that are really supposed to be entrenched in the household, right? When you're growing up as a boy or as
and
a girl in a
house. And guess who are the vanguards?
The mothers.
The mothers.
Of course. And at the end of the day, the natural leaders.
My mother
of
would
this
actually
world.
Turn around and say, you know what, you cannot walk like that.
Right.
You are a man. Mm. You cannot do that. You are not a woman. Yeah. What about the role of the mother?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our moms are fighting our cultures and they want us to grow up, you know, within our culture, and there's cultural ideas that they want us to learn so that we can be accepted by the greater community. But then there's also society, especially for me growing up in the U.S. I was reminded that I was South Sudanese, but I was also American. And those two things sometimes conflicted. My parents did a pretty good job of balancing that to make sure that I learned the culture and the limitations that I had because I was a girl. There are certain things that they told me that I couldn't do because I was a girl, while at the same time encouraging me. And that's not easy, but African parents do that every day, I think.
Ayen, what about some who say perhaps what is needed here really are mothers who think out of the box sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, that's of course, that's critical, but I think that our mothers do think outside of the box because I think they have to, because they know the world that they're raising their kids in. Yeah. But again, it goes back to the culture and society and these two things that are sometimes at odd.
Yes, that, especially like you say something about coming to America and different things, and I mean, for my experience, and I came here 10 years ago, it was like starting from the scratch, and I had to figure out everything by myself, but I just refused to give up. So I had kids, and then I brought my kids as a single mom. I had to work two jobs, and I only sleep, I remember, I only sleep like 2 hours and 3 hours when I go into school, studying and also doing two different jobs and then also taking care of my kids. And I remember one time I was driving on a highway and then I was almost passed out and my eyes keep closing and I keep opening the window and smack my face and to wake up and I did everything I could, but I find like my eyes keep closing, so I had to us to stop and take a nap on the highway. People driving 70, 80 miles per hour, like I don't even see what kind of car they are. They have, you know? So I was sleeping and then I took a nap and all I remember is I was surrounded with the police and the light and the arm, like everything's like so shocking. I feel like I'm a nightmare. When I wake up, I was shaking. It's like, what's wrong with you? They didn't think that I'm like, maybe I was dead. You know, that's what they thought. But I told them that I didn't have so much sleep, like 2 hours back to back for the past few days. And I'm trying to take a nap to get there, to get my house and not crushing myself. And he was a gentleman. He said that, okay, I'll put my car behind you and then be cover up, I mean, for you, so you can take your nap. And at the time I already up and I said, oh, thank you, so I have to go. So this is how we start when we came here. But Helen, that's why I said we are a fighter.
Helen, what about the issue of education? Because I say that because in some African countries, family has to make a choice who has to go to school.
Yes.
And in most cases, it is the guy that has to get the opportunity to go to school because the girl, she's told that one of these days you'll get married and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Don't you think that perhaps there should be a way whereby education, in fact, becomes a right for both girls and boys?
Oh yeah, of course, definitely. She have to do, like anybody can be successful when you do what you wanna do. And when you like, you know, if you have a job that like you don't like it, you're not gonna be successful. You might gonna be surviving for a moment, but not. But to do, in order to do that, that girl, she have to choose herself, what is her in heart, you know, what's in her heart.
It is so, very interesting that in some of these cultures, it is the guys that get the note to go to school, and ironically, there are some serious studies which indicate that if you educate a girl becoming a woman, that woman actually educates a community.
A community.
and in the process, a nation.
A nation.
But if you educate a guy, that guy at the end of the day becomes, unfortunately, an individual.
Mm-hmm. You know, Shaka, I want to believe that things are changing now because obviously the world is changing and the mindset is changing. I understand that in the times of that particular era when there was a priority put on boys, it was because of maybe strained resources and limitations within the family household. Mm-hmm. But I think these days, it's one of those realities that actually is unstoppable, because even if at birth or growing up you're not prioritized in the family, women will seek education at whatever late stage in their lives, because there's that understanding that I needed to become. In fact, just to quote Martin Luther King, I cannot be who I want to be unless you become who you want to be. Because in life, you can only strive and thrive but so much if you're not bringing up people with you. So at the end of the day, ultimately, this notion that you raise about one woman raising a community and then a nation, it's because it's that concept of when I grow, mm-hmm. you grow, everybody grows, and then we together as a community, as a nation, mm-hmm. yeah. we grow. And it is it's unfortunate when that opportunity is deprived of a woman or a man, because ultimately, you know, our inherent beings need to come out, and education has an amazing way of bringing out the strengths and the possibilities and the amazing drivers that yes. make the world what it is today.
Yeah,
exactly. It is very interesting because I am actually right now being reminded of two French philosophers, intellectuals. One was Descartes, mm-hmm. who came up with the idea that I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
And that brought about the destruction of slavery to the extent that people just realized that they were basically the same, really, because mm-hmm. if you can think, you are a human being.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then you had another great Frenchman called Victor Hugo, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. said, it is an idea whose time has come. If an idea comes,
it's come.
You can't stop it.
You cannot stop yeah. it.
Very interesting.
And I think also, I don't mean to dominate the conversation, but it's a reality, especially as you mentioned about coming to America. Here you find your potential, you find your strength, and you really do have that cultural clash where, okay, what can I do? But there are no limitations. Basically, you have got this platform
be
to
you
be
want.
Whatever
you can be,
you
want
to be. And it's a question
well,
now
of the land of opportunity.
It's a world of opportunity. And then it's also about breaking your mindset, because as she also mentioned, that you've got to have this sense of internal liberation where you can really believe
and
in
that,
what
and
you
that
can
knowledge,
do.
Knowledge is an equal opportunity employer.
Employer.
Yes.
It does not care whether you are a woman or whether you are a man. Mm. Whether you are tall, whether you are short,
mm-hmm. yes.
whether you are white, whether you are black, whether you are yellow.
Wherever we are now, that's our previous choice.
Right.
Whatever we're going to be in the future, that's
the
our choice.
Choice.
We're going to choose the best thing, we're going to be the best.
And that we are basically both genders are equally important
yes.
in the sense that we complement and supplement one another.
Yes.
It takes, guess what? Two
to tango.
Yeah. Well, on that note, our guests today were Helen Tadese, Dimuyake Mwakalieri, Ian Bior, and Betty Mood Idrisu, who joined us earlier. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.